From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells.
Our guest this morning is Eric Miller. He's the president and CEO of Park City-based Avion Labs. Now, Avion designs and builds a family of Bluetooth-enabled lighting products that are finding their way into all new and renovated Marriotts, many FedEx and Amazon warehouses and homes around the world. Eric Miller, welcome back to Cool Science Radio. It's great to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be back again.
Well, we have talked to you several times. We find it so interesting what you're doing at Avion. But take us back to how this this Bluetooth-enabled lighting system, how it really works and how you integrate it into a home that is existing with wires.
Sure. So the key is it allows us to make a system that's completely wireless. And it's actually very simple. We put little Bluetooth radios into the lights, into the wall switches, in commercial establishments, into motion sensors, and they all just talk together. And you set them up, and then they just talk together and do their thing. It's actually very simple. It's one of those easy to say, hard to do things. So the actual technology to make all those things work together reliably is actually really hard and kind of where our secret sauce is. But the idea of itself is they all just talk to each other, and when you press the button and turn on the light turns on.
Yeah, so what was the genesis of, like, when did the light, the proverbial light, go on for you in terms of, you know, dreaming up this company?
I've been working on large-scale networks with radios like this, mostly in the utility industry for decades, and I kind of knew what was possible and not possible in the technology, and I guess I'm a bit of a geek because I was reading the new Bluetooth standard about 8 years ago and thought I could build a better technology using some of the new capabilities that had just come out. And so we started and went and did it, and it's working.
Yeah, it's working great. So talk a little bit about, you know, you've gone pretty large scale with this technology. As we said in the intro, you're coming into Marriott hotels, you're in a lot of large warehouses, and we're talking about in the green room how you're in a lot of schools now. So how do you implement the technology into a huge warehouse setting, and why is it so appealing other than, I know this already, energy savings?
Yeah, and energy savings do really drive most of the opportunities in those projects. In a large space, and imagine a school or warehouse, it's running a wired system was literally require miles of wire, tens of thousands of feet of wire, and it's not very easy to, if you have an open ceiling, it's actually hard to even run that wire. You'd have to run in conduit and metal, and it would be very disruptive, the operation. So by putting a little radio inside each fixture, and each motion sensor, again, they can just all talk to each other, and all you have to do is install the fixture like a regular one, and your control system comes along with it.
Eric, I was always interested in distribution, and I believe 100% of your business is through alternate channels. Is that correct?
Yeah, we work with manufacturers, agents, and fixture manufacturers who then work with distributors and contractors who actually are the people who work with the end users.
And you also have OEMs that may use the mesh technology. So, like, what percentage of your business is to OEM, and what percentage is through these other channels?
I would say today, the biggest OEM channel we have is the what's called the Halo Home Connected Residential Platform, which is actually quite big and all over the country. That's probably where the largest number of units come from. I would say the largest revenue, because the commercial projects are kind of meatier, tends to come from the commercial side.
Okay. And then how would you break down your business between commercial, say, warehouse and residential?
Most of the business that we do directly is in the commercial sector now. And we supply the technology, servers, firmware, components, mobile apps for the Halo product line.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, your applications are and your phone applications are so easy to use. And there's a lot of technology out there that people just said, you know, we should write an app and put this on the phone. And it really wasn't the best interest of what they were doing, but it's a perfect marriage for you all. And I remember the product that you all gave me that I control my Christmas lights with. This is back when we were neighbors, and it just works so well. It's just very easy.
Yeah, and that's, you know, reliability is first and foremost. Everyone just wants their lights to work. You know, nobody wants a hassle with controlling their lights. So that's always been job one for what we've done, is to just make it just work. I was just on the East Coast last week with some major projects we're doing in New York City. And that was what one of our people said, is like, why do we use Avion? It's like, well, because once you set it up, it just works. And that's really what we're all about.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, Eric, that when we talk about Bluetooth, there's so much that we use that is Bluetooth right now that we don't even, you know, if we stop right now and think about it, you know, this morning I used my AirPods, a Bluetooth, you know, wireless connection to my iPhone. And I can't even think of the other Bluetooth things that I've used already this morning. But in a way, we just take this technology maybe a little bit for granted, and we don't really understand. My parents are visiting town, and my dad said to me, what exactly is Bluetooth and how does it work? And I thought, that's a really interesting step back to, you know, the fact that a lot of us just don't really understand this technology. And John was asking you this morning about the sort of the capacity for Bluetooth. And you say that it's there, it's improving all the time, it's big. So maybe just take us through the evolution of Bluetooth.
Sure. You know, at the core of Bluetooth is just a radio. It's the radio. You know, radio's been around for a long time. There's a global standard frequency that makes them all work together. And then what the Bluetooth organization did is, it's actually a very distributed group of people in the industry who just collaborate together and create these standards. So the reason that your AirPods work with your phone is because they got together and agreed on how, if you're going to do music, how it works. And they've done that with music, with controls, with audio, you know, with everything. And so when manufacturers want to make a product, if they adopt in that protocol and standard, which is available if you're a member, then they all are tested and made to work together. And it's amazing. It's a very distributed process. There's no king of Bluetooth. It's just a whole bunch of industry committees working together.
That's a nice thing, working together. I want to also ask you about one of the things that you've been working on lately, and I'm not even sure how to describe it, but it's some sort of light that disinfects. And you talk about disinfection, you know, as we know from the last 18 months, we really need a lot of disinfection around the globe, but it goes in locker rooms and it goes, you know, maybe in schools and other places.
Yeah, it's a really exciting use of lighting controls. And it's sort of backwards. What we're doing is, you want to run those lights when other people are not in a space. So I'll give you an example. We're in the Grand Rapids Airport restrooms, where when people aren't in those restrooms, the lights turn on and disinfect the space. And whenever there's nobody in there, those lights are continuously disinfecting. So that's always done. Whenever somebody might want to go in the space, it's super important to turn the lights off, because they're obviously harmful to people. So we make the system that does that. And the other thing that they really like is, we can track the data of when it's running, so they can say, okay, we ran 42 disinfecting cycles today. We know it's in good shape. We, you know, they get all of that kind of data and feedback.
Eric, maybe you can tell us about the cost effectiveness of some of these products. I know that with Bluetooth enabled products from Avion, that if you're building a new house, you can pull less copper, and copper, of course, is expensive. And there's also labor involved in that if you have a lot of four-way switches and things like that. Can you talk about savings that could be achieved in certain residential or commercial properties?
Yeah, so our products are to the point now where, you know, a smart light is not much more expensive. I mean, you can buy an Avion Halo light, you know, in Home Depot for $30. Like, it doesn't really cost much more than a regular light. Same thing with the switches, are a little more, but not much more. So the cost premium is very, very low. And well, yeah, when you count the labor savings of just pulling all the wire and getting all that in place, it, you know, in the end, it really doesn't cost much of any more. And you end up saving a lot of energy because you're only using the lights, you know, when you actually want the lights to be on.
Yeah, that's interesting. And how about the actual labor as people come in? Like the average house, I'm not sure what the percentage is on the electrical side, you know, to pull all the wire and all of that. But what kind of labor savings could there be?
Well, I would say in a typical house, if you do a regular wired, you know, with your three-way circuits, probably about half to 60% of all the wire in your house is just there for switches, not to provide power. So probably about 60% less wire.
Wow.
And labor goes directly with that.
And so with that 60% less wire, you're saving money, you're saving energy. How does this all interface with when, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about contractors in Park City coming in to remodel your home, and how does it work with an electrical contractor? Do they have to be educated and briefed on how to, you know, match these two interfaces, one with wires, one without wires?
Yes, and so, you know, as happens with a lot of things, every contractor has their go-to things, you know, that they like and don't, you know, and some contractors out there love Avion and put us into every one of their projects, and, you know, some like Lutron and put Lutron. And so depending on the contractor you pick, you'll probably, you know, some guys will know us and use us every day, and other guys may not have even heard of it. So it kind of depends a little bit on who you talk to. It's a big world out there. We haven't gotten to everybody yet.
Well, but this is coming, definitely. I think about heating contractors, for example, coming in, and, you know, we have these smart thermostats now that they've got to know about because this is the new world. And maybe we as the consumers don't really understand, you know, wireless lighting or wireless thermostats, but the contractors have to understand it.
Yeah, so certainly we'd love to have you ask them about Halo Home when you're doing stuff. We'd love to have that.
Eric, maybe you could take a couple minutes and tell us about some of these interesting things like CCT, what that is, how you can use that in a lighting situation, and, you know, just...
Sure. Increasingly what's happening both in commercial and residential is it's becoming fairly inexpensive to build the, you know, people are probably familiar with cool white and warm white, to actually build both into the same light. And then using our controls, it's very easy to change those between cool and warm. And so there's just a lot of great applications. You know, say you're at your dining room table and kids are doing homework, where you might want to have a really a cooler light that is more intense, you know, really good for working on it. Well, if you're having a nice dinner, you know, you want a warm light that's a little more ambiance, and you can actually just flip back and forth between those with a button on the wall. And we're seeing a lot of application for this in schools now, where being able to do the same thing with kids during the day, you know, at nap time, you can like warm the light and calm everybody down. If you're doing some, you know, big activity where you really need precise lighting, a science project or something, you can turn the lights. So it's really moving into everything. And the barrier has been actually not the cost of the light. It's been the controls that typically were so expensive and difficult that was why people don't do it. And as we've kind of solved that problem, and it costs virtually nothing extra to have multiple colors versus single colors in our system, we're seeing schools, individual, all of the Halo residential platform, all of the lights are actually all color changing, just built in.
And I have these memories of sitting in a classroom, the fluorescent buzz, you know, it's just on 100%, and it's either on or it's off. It's sort of a binary thing, and now you can make those adjustments. And it's not like you have to be sliding pots or anything to you know, adjust the light. You can set preferences, then just hit a button, and it'll go right to that preference that's already sort of pre-dialed in.
Yeah, exactly. For someone who's been around lighting a long time, the whole fluorescent era is just kind of a bad dream. It taught us all that lighting was crummy, noisy, uncontrollable, poor quality light. It just was awful. As a technology, it was just horrible. And I was so excited to see it just getting banished from the planet, you know, as it should be. And now with LEDs, we can make them dim, the quality of the light's better, it's not flickering, they last a long time. And so being able to, now we have something to control, something worth controlling. And as a result, we're seeing this huge change to bring lighting controls back, because if all you could do is turn them on and off and barely that, you didn't really need controls. Well, now when you have all this capability in the lights, a lot more value and a lot of cool things you can do with controls now.
Yeah. I was visiting my son in Seattle, and he was showing me his new room that he had just decked out, and he said, I guess he was talking to Siri or Alexa. I don't know who he was talking to, but he said, turn on the Christmas lights, dim the lights, turn the lights to party mode, turn the lights to, you know, he went through this whole litany of things that he could have the lights do. And I'm just wondering, you know, of course he's 23 and that's what he does, but what about late adapters? You know, what about people who currently are saying, well, I've got this light switch over there, that's how I've done it for 65 years, and the lights go on or they go off, or maybe they dim. You know, how do we bring people along into this really exciting new technology?
Yeah, and we support all those systems. You know, you can use Google Home or Alexa on our platform, and you know, for a separate conversation, there's an amazing amount of technology under the hood it takes to actually make that work. It's quite astonishing, actually. To just appear so easy. But yeah, I think my biggest thing is, you know, have people try it. It's pretty easy to set up. And, you know, like anything, some people just love it and it's just a fish to water and it's like, where has this been all my life? And
yeah.
Other people I like to hit a button.
Right.
You know, it's easy to do both.
And it really seems that you're kind of focusing on larger scale projects and systems instead of perhaps the individual consumer, but you know, we all need to be brought along. I wanted to ask you about the difference between your systems and the products, because you've mentioned a couple of products that you have, a couple of lights specifically, and then you also talk about your systems. I'm wondering if, you know, going back to the disinfecting light, is that light a product of yours, or are you taking another company product and implementing it with your system?
So there's the kind of three elements of a system. There's the light itself, there's the hardware that you put in to do the controls, the radio and the dimming modules and the motion sensors and the wall switches, and then there's the software system, the mobile apps and all the servers that run all that. So we now make all of the controls hardware that goes on the fixture and the system and the platform. So when you get a wall station, it's actually made by us, or a motion sensor, or the controllers. We don't make lights. We don't plan to make lights. So we partner with dozens of fixture manufacturers who put our controls into their fixture, and then they sell an Avion controllable product.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Eric Miller. He's the president and CEO of Park City-based Avion Labs. And I know that you have some new patents, which I wanted to ask you about what they are for. But I also wanted to ask sort of a general question, and that is, are there countries that you have to keep your eye on as far as going against your patents? Are there individual companies that try to reverse engineer and try to get around your patents that you have to keep your eye out on?
I mean, we do have coverage. We're selective about what country. We have a number of other countries, and we do Europe, China, Australia, Japan. So it's a combination of places we think we might want to do business today, or someone, or countries where a company might be based that might create competing products. And you can't do all 250 countries, and it's not worth it. There are, you know, probably not going to be a Luxembourg, you know, big entity. But so you kind of have strategic about your markets and where other competitors are in terms of where you file to extend your patents.
Man, we've heard so much about chip shortages. Can you have any war stories on those?
Oh my God. This is literally every day.
Yeah.
It is, we have parts going from that we used to get in a couple of weeks that take as long as a year. It's actually insane. And so I literally wake up almost every morning finding out what product we need more of, because we're growing extremely rapidly now. And I want to get more. Walt, this morning's fire drill was wall stations. We have this two giant school districts we just won, who now need thousands of wall stations. Well, I need to build wall stations. Well, there's a part in the power supply of the little wall station that now takes 30 weeks to get. Well, now I can't make them for 30 weeks. And can I do my project or not? That's every day this year. It's since January. That's been our life every day. We've been pretty successful. You escalate to companies, you plan ahead. We've ordered product now out through Q2 of next year to try to work ahead of it. And we've been pretty successful, but it's honestly a nightmare. It's just unbelievable how difficult it is. We're doing better than the auto companies. We're still selling product and they don't have any cars. So we're beating a lot of big guys. I'm actually fairly proud of how we're doing. But it's, boy, talk about a challenge. It's amazing.
What do you think about self-sufficiency as a country for DRAMs and certain electronic components where we can have a little bit more control of our destiny?
I think it would be great, but I think few people understand how distributed the supply chain is. Like, okay, well, we make chips. Well, where does chips come? Well, chip comes from silicon platters. You know, silicon platters are grown in Taiwan, for example, mostly. And then the company that cuts them up is in another country, and the company that etches all the lines on it is in another country, and the country that packages those into little chips is in another country. And so it doesn't do a lot of good to just pick one of those pieces. You'd have to really create an end-to-end. I mean, a given chip probably physically moves through six countries in its life, from a piece, from a chunk of sand to a finished product. And so unless we kind of do all of that, you're not going to make a lot of progress, and it's a lot of work. So I think it'd be great, but it's a pretty tall order.
So it's interesting, Eric, because you're so deeply embedded in this whole industry. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the microchip shortage. Yeah. And, you know, it seems like about, I don't know, 5 or 8 years ago, I'd never heard of supply chain, you know, and now it is literally tying up our lives. When the supply chain gets disrupted, we know it was the boat getting stuck in the Suez Canal and COVID in general. But can you just kind of wrap up that conversation a little bit?
It's still a little perplexing to everybody. It's a combination of COVID definitely created. What's interesting is it wasn't actually the manufacturing disruption of COVID. It was the explosion in demand. Everybody is buying things with two or three times as many things with chips in them now than they were a year ago. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And COVID lifestyle changes. Now I have a home office. I need a new computer. I bought a new television. I bought a new screen. I bought a whatever. That's actually generating the new thermostat because I'm home all day, whatever. All that stuff's generating what's called IoT, you know, my Fitbits and my AirPods and, you know, everything I have now has a chip in it. All that's caused an explosion in demand, and the same things happened in the commercial sector as well. And so there's the basic level, it's just everybody wants two or three times as much stuff, and the factories weren't built for it, and they're having to expand capacity, but it takes years to build new factories, not months. The final thing was just a ton of weird bad luck. You know, one of the chip factories that etches all the silicon for most of the chips on the planet had a fire, lost a bunch of product. Well, there, it was dry summer in Taiwan, and they didn't have enough water to wash all the plates to make as much more silicon. It's like
it's
there was
a fire, storm.
Two fires in the two factories in China that make most of the plastics. Just a bunch of wacko, out of the blue stuff.
Yeah. Eric Miller, the CEO, president and CEO of Park City-based Avion Labs. Sorry, sometimes we call it Avion. I'm sure you just go with whatever.
Good.
But it's AVI-ON. And you can find them. And Eric also has a podcast about all of these interesting topics that you can find on the website, Avion.
And Lynn, we didn't have time to talk about job openings, but for our listeners that are interested, go to avion.com and you'll be able to find the local job openings.
AVI-ON.com. Eric Miller, great to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
So terrific to be here again. Thanks very much.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5. And leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening. And hey, tune in next week.